Eddie Hearn, straight back in for a massive fight week. First of all...
Well, no, first of all...
Oh, go on.
Surely after your incredible performance on Saturday in the ring with the mic, I can't believe I've actually got the pleasure of having you in my office at 9 o'clock on a Monday morning. How they've kept you humble, I don't know. This is going to be an issue for us, but congratulations on all your success. It's Jamie Ward, by the way, the new guy you're doing the interviews with.
There's like five right here. But I'm also a bit
Follow him on Insta.
Yeah, I'm a bit disappointed I'm not in front of the camera today.
Yeah,
I guess this is all about you.
Difficult for you, isn't it?
Yeah. This is all about you today. Yeah. But straight back in, Eddie Hearn, is that why the work ethic of Mr. Hearn is unrivaled in many ways, you think?
Yeah, I think if you love what you do, I mean, we're all so lucky to do what we do, aren't we? I mean, you know, we talked off the camera about going to sleep after the fight. It's very difficult to do because you're just buzzing, the adrenaline, and Monday mornings are always quite difficult because I don't really sleep on a Saturday after a show, and Sundays, you know, running around after the kids. So Mondays is always difficult. But when you've got Wood Warrington and a great card as well, it's a buzz. And my buzz comes from the type of show that we've got because we have a show nearly every week. So as we know, some shows are a 6 or 7 out of 10. Some shows are a 10 out of 10. Saturday's a 10 out of 10. So we're absolutely buzzing. Buzzing to get up to Sheffield, buzzing for fight week. And to be honest with you, buzzing for the fight. Because I've played it out in my head. I'm so fond of both guys. We've had a great history with them. You know, the narrative is fantastic. It's just a true, great British fight for the world title.
Before we talk about this coming Saturday, you've had a bit of time to reflect on this past weekend. Jaya Pattaya announcing himself, I think, in more ways. You know, after the Breeders' fight, everyone had an idea of what we were working with, but certainly that performance against Jordan Thompson was special. What did you make of what you saw and what you think you could be working with here in Oppenheim?
I just think sometimes you just have to look at, you know, the social numbers, the digital numbers, the noise around a performance to see how excited people get, how excited fans get. And we saw a lot of noise. You know, it was a relatively small show for us on Saturday, but still a world championship fight. Not a lot of people knew about Jaya Pattaya. Not a lot of people knew about Jordan Thompson, but the fight built nicely and people enjoyed the intensity of Jaya Pattaya, you know, the look in his eyes, and that translated in the ring as well. It's really difficult to drum into fighters that it's an entertainment business when it's such a tough and brutal sport. So I'm forever sitting ringside saying, step on him, walk him down, beat him, you know, and the trainers probably listen to me going, like, but the reality is, boxing needs stars. And we need people that are going to go in there with bad intent to entertain and excite. And Jaya Pattaya, for all the talk about Jordan Thompson, 6'7", massive cruiserweight, he just walked him down and beat him up. And people love to watch that. But he did it with skill, he did it with poise, but he did it with intent. And he became a star on Saturday night. You know, he should have become a star when he beat Bradis, but Australian boxing's a little bit strange like that. You know, it's a strong audience, but a small audience, and a lot of it's stuck behind a pay-per-view paywall, even some of the medium-level fights. And those Australian fighters like to take the international fights to break out and become a name. And I think that's what Jai did on Saturday night. I think he's got a great future, and he's up for it. You know, so refreshing to work with a fighter that just wants the big fights. Just give me the champions. Let's do this. And you know, I think activity is the key for him as well. But I think a real superstar.
What is next in terms of, you know, he talks about Chris Billam Smith. He wants the WBO belt. You look at the other champions, Badou Jack. Not entirely sure what his next move is. There's talks of him fighting Canelo and all sorts. Gulamarin as well. In terms of logical steps, what do you see as the next option?
Look, Bradis is the mandatory. You know, it's very likely that will be next.
That's a big fight.
It is. I mean, I don't, you know, it's been done. It's an Australian against a Latvian.
Where'd you put that on?
I think it has to be Australia. You know, I saw Brady say do it in London, but, you know, it's a difficult fight to stage in London. So back to Australia, I think, for that one. And then the belts, has to be the belts. I mean, I don't see any cruiserweight beating him. You know, when you look at the other champions, Badou Jack, Chris Billam Smith, Gulamarin, what fighter would you even, disrespectfully, not give a chance to, but like he'd be a massive favourite in all those fights. And Australia is a big market for us, and we've got some fantastic Australian fighters. But now I think is the time to try and, you know, bring him home. He talked about returning to his home and doing a stadium fight there in New South Wales, and I'd like to make that happen. I think he deserves it. And, you know, he came over to the UK, and we saw his interview in the ring. I think he felt like he was perceived as the away fighter, and I guess he was, but he was a big favourite in the fight, and he delivered.
We saw the news that he's, from all accounts, been called in to spar Tyson Fury for this Usyk fight. How much of a compliment is that to Jaya Patai?
I think, you know, when you start looking at what Usyk did in the cruiserweight division, which was incredible, and the fact that he's a southpaw, but regardless, I think Opetai could go on a similar path. And the one thing that Usyk did, which was incredible, was beat a lot of those champions in their backyard. So our plan with Jai and Mick Francis and Tasman Fighters is to bring the big fights to Australia, but he would have no problem travelling to win those fights. So whether that's Badou Jack in the US, whether that's Chris Billamsmith in the UK, whether that's Goulamarin in France, unlike, but he wouldn't have a problem doing it. And I think he's going to be undisputed cruiserweight world champion. And I'd love to do that within 12 to 15 months.
In terms of the paths in comparison to Usyk then, obviously Usyk's done it at heavyweight. When you look at Opetai's size, do you believe he could carry that to heavyweight?
The skill set? I think it's going to be difficult, you know. But again, you saw him in with a guy who will now be at heavyweight in Jordan Thompson. And he didn't have a problem with him. So obviously, as his team said, there is levels. But first things first, let's unify the division, see him become undisputed, and if there's a move to heavyweight, fantastic.
Just a couple of questions on the rest of the card. Chev's an interesting one because he's moving at a rapid pace. That was a good performance in an exciting fight against a tough man in Dukar. He's got options, you know, likely being the top 15 of the IBF now. He's won British title eliminators as well. Where do you see him currently?
I think Chev is definitely one of... When you talk about the fighters coming through the Olympic system, and in his case, Tokyo, I think he's really the one that's caught a lot of the eyeballs. I think he's the one that's got a lot of momentum. I think he's the one that's been the most exciting. And the pace that Chev goes at now is really determined by his team more than anything. As you know, I'm ready to let these guys go, but I don't make the decisions. I want them to move fast, and I know when I think I'm ready, but the guys, Sam Mullins, great trainer, great team around Chev, will determine how quickly that will be. When you get to the winning a regional belt, like Chev did on Saturday, he'll be in the top 15 in the IBF. You really have two options. You move down the world route, or you move the domestic, international, European route. I always prefer domestic titles, British titles, European titles, going on to world titles. But sometimes people keep those belts hostage. Sometimes the politics of sport don't allow you to fight with them. So we'll have to see. But, you know, certainly Luau against Chamberlain, the winner of that fight, is a great fight for Chev. You know, put him as a big favourite in that fight. But if that's locked up or people are being silly and messing around, now we can start looking at the top 15. Similar route to Jordan Thompson. The problem with Jordan was he never had the fight in between. And with Chev, we've got the time to do that. So those top 15 guys, you bridge the gap between Vasyl Dukar and Jai Opetai. And that's what we didn't do because opportunity knocked for Jordan. So now there's two guys in between Vasyl Dukar and Jai Opetai that Chev's got to get through to prove he's ready and to show his team that he's ready. But although he's, you know, he's not old, but he's not 24, 25, I think he's happy to move fast. We just got to be smart and make the right moves as well, not get too carried away. Realise he's only had 7 fights, but, you know, an outstanding fighter and a great talent.
Just final one on Jordan. You said about him being a heavyweight next. Has he confirmed that?
Yeah, 100%. I said to him in the change room, you know, like, there were conversations after his last fight that it's time to move up to heavyweight, but when this opportunity comes, you've got to take it. So, you know, he did that. Obviously, financially, he did well. It didn't go the way that he wanted it to. But I think what he did was rose his profile. I think people respected the fact that he rolled the dice. They should do. They respected the fact that even though he was out of his depth, he never stopped trying. You know, there was a moment, I think even in the second or third round, You know, he started holding his feet, letting his hands go, and he kept getting up and he kept fighting back and he kept coming out of the corner. And I think too often now we're seeing in boxing fighters that just aren't turning up to fight. Like, and that's, I think that happens more at the high level with the money in the sport now. And I think Jordan Thompson should be respected. He's like 6'7", he's got massive legs. He's gonna end up being over 16 stone as a heavyweight. So, and I think that'll improve his durability, will give him more confidence to let his hands go. So that's the future for him.
Final one on this past weekend, on our show's front anyway. With all due respect to Laura Griffith, I think everyone wants to see Ellie Scotney tested now. Ellie does, you do as well. Marlon Rivas versus Erica Cruz coming up. Is that the obvious
I'd love
one
her
to
fight the winner of that fight. You know, I think Ellie has done, you know, she's still, you know, only had, what, is it seven or eight fights? Eight fights, I think. But she's great win for the world title. First defence, locked in. Now it's time to start rolling the dice. And she can do it. She's an outstanding talent, loads of skill. You know, Rivas against Cruz is going to be an incredible fight. And I'd like to see Ellie fight the winner. Might maybe even give her a US debut, you know, and go and have a big fight abroad. I think she's ready now to start rolling the dice and start trying to wrap up these belts.
Across the world, your old friend Canelo Alvarez in action, a dominant performance really against Charlo. I just wonder what your take on it was. And did you stay up to watch it live? Did you watch
No, I didn't. I didn't stay up to watch it live. But I think when Canelo came into that fight hungrier, mentally in a better place, physically in a better place. I just don't know what Charlo's doing. You know, like these guys get the opportunity like that and you're just not rolling. It looked like a sparring session. Like he never, and again, it's very difficult for, like I talk like a fan on this. I had nothing to do with the fight. So my opinion, you know, fans think they're entitled to their opinion, which they always are. So am I. And I just don't understand how you can sit at a press conference, say this, say that, my time, legacy, shock the world, show I'm a great, and then just not even, say not try. I mean, he was out of his depth, but like, you know, and again, I go back to like Jordan Thompson. I know it's a different level, and I know it's not Canelo Alvarez, and I know it's not, but at least if you're going to get beat, go out and you shield and get chinned. And those kind of performances can really affect your profile moving forward. Like there isn't, you know, before Jermell Charlo against Terence Crawford, mega fight. Is it now? Like, who's rushing to see Jermell Charlo back? I thought it was a really disappointing fight, but pleased obviously because Sal did it. And I think Sal probably wanted a bit more from Charlo as well, but he just went into a shell and just tried to survive. And it was just weird, like very poor.
What's next for Canelo? If you had the keys, what's next?
Well, I think because of his deal with the PBC, I think, again, just as a fan, I think they were thinking Charlo, the brother, in the next fight. But I think that fight's dead now. Like, probably thinking the first fight was going to be a good fight and competitive and, you know, maybe a little bit controversial, and then the brother steps in and it's a great story. But who wants to see Canelo against Charlo, the brother, now? No one. So Benavidez, I think, is, you know, a big fight. And then there's a Crawford talk. I can't see it. I don't see Canelo coming at under 168 ever. And I don't see, you know, I'm not sure Crawford goes to 168, but listen, he's getting on. He's probably thinking, I want to keep these big paychecks coming in, so we'll see.
In terms of the comments on social media, like you say, everyone's entitled to their opinion. Mm-hmm. But even, you know, journalists are saying the fight week didn't seem very Canelo-y. It's almost like a bit of air has gone out of the balloon. What's your take on those comments regarding, I guess, Canelo's profile?
No, I think Canelo's a superstar.
Yeah.
Huge profile. I felt like the fight was underwhelming in terms of its buzz. Like you saw, you know, areas of the arena curtained off and stuff like that. And I don't know. I mean, it on paper was a mega fight. You know, obviously they didn't do it on Mexican Independence Weekend because the UFC fight was there. I don't know. I'm biased. I think if I was promoting the fight, I think it would have been a mega fight. But I'm the megaphone guy with a big mouth. They don't have that. You know, PBC are a fantastic organisation. Who's the promoter? I don't, you know, who's out there grinding with the media? Who's got the megaphone out on the streets? Who's telling the world this fight's happening? You know, was the machine pushing the promotion while the fighter's asleep? And I think that affects the general buzz of the show.
I think one name you missed off the what could be next list is Dimitri Bivol. Mm. I think I asked this question on behalf of the fans. You know, when you look at what he did, beating Canelo, beating Zerda Ramirez, where is he?
Well, he's been injured. He's had a hand injury for a while now, but he's ready to go. Ready to go in December, and we're in talks with him about opponents. Difficult because really, I say the only fight he's interested in, but he just wants the Undisputed Championship. So he wants the winner of Callum Smith and Beterbiev. But at the same time, that fight has now been delayed, so he has to fight in the meantime. So we're looking for him to fight in December, and then I think he has to fight the winner of that fight, and I think it's a mega fight.
Right, let's talk about this week. Out of the schedule, when you were putting fights together, and I guess, Ed, when you... I know you have a little notepad that you have on your desk, and sometimes, I won't name any names, people come in and try and get a little look of the fights that you're plotting. Josh Warrington versus Lee Wood. As a fan, how excited are you for this one?
Yeah, it's a natural mega fight for this country. You know, when you talk about performances, you talk about resume, you talk about, you know, ticket sales, you talk about support of a city. When you bring two big fan bases together, you create, one, an incredible atmosphere, but two, just an incredible fight. Two British, two-time world champions, head-to-head. Josh Warrington trying to become a three-time world champion. And I just have absolutely no... I think when you talk about 50-50s, it is impossible to go into this fight with any extreme confidence of the winner. And, you know, when you break it down, it depends kind of what side you're on. You know, if you're a Josh Warrington fan, you're saying, is Lee Wood actually that good? You know, I remember when he got stopped by Gavin McDonnell and he struggled at British level and, yeah, you know, he beat Conlon, but he was behind, he got dropped. And then he got knocked out by Lara or stopped against Lara. I know he won the rematch, but Lara missed the weight and was he the same that night, et cetera, et cetera. And if you're a Lee Wood fan, you're saying, no. Like that was he knocked out Conlon. You know, he schooled Lara in a rematch. He punches very, very hard. Josh Warrington is at the end of his career. Josh Warrington has pillow fists. And then the Warrington fan comes back and says, Lee Wood has no chin. It's like, I just think it's going to be an absolute thriller. I think Lee Wood has got extreme power. He has got extreme confidence. He has got Ben Davison and the team just making him tick in every single way. But Josh Warrington's a tough son of a bitch. Josh Warrington's work rate is unbelievable. I think Josh Warrington's chin is unbelievable as well. And I think Josh Warrington's going to try and walk through on Saturday night. I think Josh Warrington thinks Lee Wood will be out of there within six rounds. I think he's going to, from the first bell, steamroll Lee Wood and try and knock him out. And I think he's going to walk on to everything Lee Wood can handle. I think this fight is a six-round fight. I think it's got the potential to go 12 rounds and be a back-and-forth war. But I think it's going to be absolutely electric. When you talk about 10,000 people in Sheffield Arena, half Leeds, half Nottingham, this atmosphere is going to be very, very special. And it's a great card as well. You know, Terry Harper unifying against Cecilia Brackhouse. She sold 1,000 tickets on her own. Kieran Conway against Linus Ndofia. Loved that fight. Final eliminator for the British title. Hopi Price against Conor Coghill. Both sold a load of tickets. Great domestic fight. Janae Boston in a really good step up again. Future superstar. You know, Cameron Vong making his debut. Nico Levers in a great fight as well. Great card. Great night. Great fight. And it will be a thriller. So everybody in Sheffield, Leeds, Nottingham, get yourself to all the Fight Week events. There's limited tickets available. Grab them up and be part of a special night on Saturday.
Josh, I've been fortunate to spend a fair bit of time in camp with Josh for his last few fights. He seems so different for this one. I've tried to put my finger on it. He's used the word obsessed, and he seems like he's been in the zone for a long time now. I know, Ed, as your job as promoter, you'll often say, it's must win, it's must win, it's must win. For Josh Warrington, do you think that's part of where the obsession to beat Lee Wood is coming from, because he feels that?
Yeah, look, he's a winner. And he wants to become he's got a chance to become a three-time world champion. Like, that's unbelievable. To think back, and I've had the pleasure of working with these guys for a long time. And I go back to Hull, for both guys, where Josh Warrington fought Samir Mamoon for the Commonwealth title and bought 200 or 300 from Leeds in the Hull Ice Arena, which holds, I don't know, 2,000, 2,500. And I thought, wow, this kid's exciting. He's got a good little fan base. And then we rolled the dice on, I think, a Tuesday night at the Leeds Arena. And we sold, I don't know, 2,500. I thought, we got some here. And he's gone on. I think sometimes when a fighter has a big fan base, the British fighter fans, the hardcore fighter fans, almost hold that against them, and they forget about the pedigree of the fighter and what they've achieved. When you look at Josh, like, his career has been unbelievable. You know, he beat Lee Selby at Elland Road to become world champion. He beat Carl Frampton at the MBN, and people were so high on Carl Frampton at that point, like he was like bordering on the pound for pound list. You know, came back, beat Kiko Martinez. Like, even the performance against Lopez, which is a fight I thought he was going to edge, was a great performance. Like, he's showing no signs, in my opinion, of deterioration or he's not the same fighter. I don't see that. And I think he's going to come into this fight with a lot of fire. And being a three-time world champion, that's pretty unbelievable for the resume. And he's still got ambitions to go and have that big fight in America and do all this other stuff as well. So he's going to be really tough to beat. But Lee is mentally really strong. And I think, again, going back to Hull, he got stopped by Gavin McDonald at super bantamweight. Like, I love Gavin McDonald, but he wasn't the biggest puncher in the world. And, you know, it's like, again, going back to that debate about the fight, Lee Wood's been really active. Will that help him? Will that hinder him at this age and part of his career? Josh Warrington hasn't been very active at all. Is that good? Is it bad? Is it keeping him fresh? Is he rusty? I mean, there's an argument on every level for this fight, and that's what makes it so intriguing. And I promise you, you will get a thriller on Saturday night.
For Lee, the city ground, the carrot that's there, he knows now if he beats Josh Warrington, he has that fight locked in. Could that be positive or negative or a bit of both?
I don't think he's even thinking about it. He's just got to beat Josh Warrington, you know. The game, the sport, it's a game of snakes and ladders. You just, you know, you keep winning and you keep going up, and every now and again you lose and you come back down again. He's up here, you know, he lost to Lara, beat Lara. If he beats Warrington, he's up, and you just keep on going, but it's fight by fight. And I don't think people quite understand the incredible Lee Wood story. Like, I'm not talking just about legacy and world titles, I'm talking about money, right? Which is ultimately, you see 99% of people leave this sport without hitting a jackpot, without being financially rewarded, without being able not to work again and being able to, you know, look after their closest. I cannot believe what has happened to Lee Wood. Like, from going out and fighting Reese Mould behind closed doors to the paydays that he's received to fight Kanzu, okay, Conlon, mega. Lara, mega. Lara rematch, mega. Warrington, even bigger. Like, it's the most pleasing thing that I know Lee Wood will always be sweet. Like, and that's, but he's still got aspirations well beyond the financial side. He's thinking, beat Warrington, oh, that's a massive win for me. Go and fight at the city ground, maybe move up, maybe challenge for another world title. So both guys feel like they've still got a lot to give. But is a defeat career ending? Quite possibly.
In terms of the rematch clause, there isn't one, is there?
No.
What does that tell you?
I mean, one, the main reason there isn't a rematch clause is because...
Is that because of Komatov?
Yeah, Komatov is the mandatory, so they can't. So, but you see a thriller, I mean, there's a very good chance you see it again. At that point, the belts don't really matter.
So could it still be at City Ground, potentially, yeah. if Josh is to...
Would Warrington rematch? I mean, I can't see this fight being anything else other than a thriller. I don't think anyone can. So, listen, we'll see what happens, but let's get Saturday out of the way first.
few other bits just want to talk to you about. Can't wait for this weekend, of course, live on the Zone. Conor Benn posted on his Instagram back in the gym this morning. I think he had a little break. It was his birthday, turned 27 out in the States after the fight. Any update, any news?
No, we're in talks with a number of sites about hosting Ben Eubank. It's the fight we want to make. It's the biggest fight for both guys. We'd love to do the fight in the UK. If that's possible, I don't know. But December 23 is still our focus. You know, we know a potential fight with Fury Usyk. We'll have to see what plans out in the next week or so. But we would like to go December 23rd, and that would be our ideal fight.
Seems a bit of an obvious question, but for those who are wondering, there's absolutely no way you'd go up against that.
No, I mean, it doesn't make sense for either fight to go up against it. You know, Fury Usyk is a huge fight. Ben Eubank is a huge fight. You know, I guess when you're in this business and you're planning those kind of nights, if we're going to go December 23rd, we probably want to make a decision in the next 2 weeks. But they probably won't make a decision till after Fury and Ngannou. So you either go for it and hope they don't go, or just timing won't work for them. Because it's a big fight. Really, you know, if you're talking about October 29 to December 23, it's only, what, 7 weeks of promotion? So, I don't know. I think they'll go in January. But if they do go 23rd, we'll definitely have to look at it.
I did a great interview with Nigel Benn last week, and he's very animated as always, but he seems a bit more so animated this time. He's saying how personal it is. And is the fight, Ed, bigger? Whether that's for the right or wrong reasons, is it bigger?
The fight is so much bigger than before, for many reasons. I mean, firstly, when Eubank got beat by Smith, I feel like the fight became a little bit smaller. When he won the rematch, the fight becomes bigger. The controversy, the people talking about Conor Benn, the opinion, the love, the hate, whatever it could be. And the things that Eubank has said, Conor's taken it really badly and personally, and so has Nigel. So you see the first fight, it was Eubank-Benn, it was the rivalry, but both guys, like, they knew about the history, they knew about the family rivalry, but they never really disliked each other. Now, with all the noise, with all the names, with all the history, comes hatred. And that makes a fight so much bigger. Like, the build-up would be one of the best build-ups you've ever seen. And you're going to see this fight. So our job, get it over the line, and we're motivated to get that done and also get Joshua Wilder made as well.
In terms of Anthony Joshua, have you spoke to AJ about the Fury Usyk news at all, out of interest?
No. I mean, we knew that it was likely and certainly that it was being discussed. I think it just makes everybody, and I said in an interview the other day about the ecosystem of boxing, it just makes everyone want to do more, which is when a big fight gets made, it's great for boxing, because I think every fighter, every promoter, every network goes, okay, our turn now. So what are we going to do? And our turn is Joshua Wilder. That's the fight we must make. And AJ and Wilder will probably have seen that news and go, we need to get ours announced now. So that's what we're working on. I'm very confident you see that also.
You mentioned about the Tuesday night roll of the dice back in the day. How difficult is it with these clashes at the minute? I mean, obviously, there's so much boxing like with sport for choice, but how can you combat this?
But I think people always talk about boxing's dead, is boxing the same? But boxing's flying. You've got more broadcasters than ever before in a sport. You've got more shows than ever before in a sport. Some will feel that dilutes it, but it doesn't really, because actually the quality of the shows in terms of the fights that are on the card is much better than it used to be 5 years ago, 10 years ago. But I just think that, you know, when you work with a broadcaster, you get your date. And sometimes that date might be the same as what another broadcaster said. Then you have to try and marry it up with a venue, which is very difficult to get availability. Still off the back of COVID, really. So you're trying to make everything work on a date. Sometimes the clashes don't really bother you. Sometimes it doesn't really, it definitely works against you. And you have to make a decision. But very difficult to marry up the broadcaster's date, the venue availability, you know, the schedule, but, you know, in an ideal world, no clashes.
Last two on the missing dates in the schedule, November the 11th, December 2nd, what's the latest?
Yeah, November 11th will be a Next Gen in Liverpool, Newcastle, which we'll announce shortly, and December 2nd will be another UK date as well, which will be announced probably next week. So we are, obviously we have Wood Warrington this week. Next week is no show with KSI against Tommy Fury. Then we have Mexico.
You watching that?
Oh, but I might go. I think it's unbelievable. Honestly.
Do you regret not still being involved?
No, because I just can't. I can't do it. I can't. I think it's brilliant. Like, Calla and Mams are doing a brilliant job. And it's doing great numbers. Like, that show, KSI and Tommy Fury, will do massive numbers.
What, does it get near Joshua Parker, which I think is the record, 1.8 million in the UK?
No, 1.1, 1.15 million.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Don't read Twitter, Jamie. But
you should have taken that.
Yeah, no.
That was higher.
But no, I think it can do a million buys. I do. I really do. And it's just not, I say it's not for me. I'll watch it. I think it's great, but it's just like, I just think if I was in my 20s, I'd be all over it. All over it. But I just, you know, I feel like I've got a job to do for boxing. But that, then Cancun for Oshaki Foster against Hernandez, Monaco for Caldina, Next Gen in Newcastle, LA for Pacheco against Caceres, Cameron against Taylor on the 25th, December the 2nd show now, Haney Pro Grade December 9, Bam against Sonny Edwards on the 16th, 23rd, hopefully, Ben Eubank. And then that'll be us for Christmas, sweet as a nut.
No days off.
Never.
Final part of this interview now, which we might use as a social trailer. I always have felt, Ed, in a different life, in a parallel universe, you are £2 for a pound, £2 for a pound market trader somewhere. Give us the market sales pitch for the WBA World Featherweight title contest between Lee Wood and Josh Warrington this Saturday on DAZN.
Am I doing it to you or to the camera?
Down the lens.
What do you want? What do you really want? You want blood. You want guts. You want competition. You want will to win. You want legacy. You want passion. You want noise. And I know you want violence. Well, this Saturday at the Utilia Arena in Sheffield, you have one of the great British fights of our generation. Two-time world champions. Lee Wood from Nottingham. Josh Warrington from Leeds. And in between, you've got the beautiful city of Sheffield. Split the arena in half. Wood, Warrington. 10,000 passionate fans. Probably the best fans in the country when you're talking about a boxing fan base. Two guys battling it out for the WBA Featherweight Championship of the World. This is a true British classic. Great undercard. Great night of boxing. 50-50 fight. Could go either way. Everything on the line. We'll see you this Saturday in Sheffield, live on DAZN.
How was that?
Easy work.